All presentations are provided for informational purposes only. They do not serve as an invitation or encouragement to participate in any investment activities. If you are considering making an investment, you should seek appropriate financial advice. What you're about to listen to is an audio recording of a presentation originally broadcast on our platform. As such, sometimes presenters might refer to graphs, images, or videos. For the original presentation and much more, check out our website at investormeetcompany.com. Apologies for the interruption. Back to the presentation.
Good morning and welcome to the Redcentric PLC Interim Results Investor Presentation. Throughout the recorded presentation, investors will be in listen-only mode. Questions are encouraged and can be submitted at any time by the Q&A tab situated in the right corner of your screen. Just simply type in your questions and press send. The company may not be in a position to answer every question it receives during the meeting itself. However, the company can review the questions submitted today and publish responses where it's appropriate to do so. Before we begin, I'd like to submit the following poll. I'd now like to hand you up to CEO Michelle Senecal-Fonseca. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I know it's a really busy time leading up to the holidays, so thank you for spending this morning with us. I'm Michelle Senecal-Fonseca, and I'm the CEO of Redcentric, having joined in this role as of May of this year. But last year, I had joined the company as an NED. Part of the reason why I joined Redcentric in the first place is it's a business that I know very well, not necessarily Redcentric, but I have managed companies like this only perhaps on a more global scale with Vodafone and Cable and Wireless and others. So I'm a long-term industry hand and was very excited to have the opportunity to join the business. I'm joined here today by our CFO, who's also a new member of the board. Tony, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'll introduce myself. So Tony Rack, the CFO. I joined the business actually in the summer and, you know, delighted to be here. My background is I'm a UK chartered accountant, trained with KPMG, have an MBA as well. And I guess I've spent, it actually says 25 years, it's actually a little more than that, but 20 plus years of experience, all in technology, all in fast growth businesses, mixed with product and service businesses, certainly a mixture of sectors as well. And I think I've hopefully got an interesting, relevant mix of experience, quite strategic, operational and transactional based, mixture of work on the private companies and on public markets, you know, including the AIM market. I've got two examples here on the screen. SourceBio was a service, a laboratory services business, grew that to 4x revenue in 2 years and about 8x EBITDA. Brady was a buy and build on AIM. So lots of public company experience. And I think ultimately my focus really, or theme throughout my career, has really been about helping to build shareholder value and realizing shareholder value ultimately. And as I say, delighted to be here.
Great. Next slide. Well, Redcentric has been a British brand for a number of decades. And I imagine some of you have, you know, been following us or maybe lost touch with where Redcentric has been. But where we're at today is over the last 4 or 5 years, it's gone through a series of acquisitions that built up a rather substantial data center business and managed service business. And when I joined the company last year, the board, we asked management to take a look at what was the markets that they were involved in, how's the growth, the profitability, and the investment criteria for each one. And through that process, we really decided that they're a bit more distinct, and so we started to operate the businesses in two distinct towers. We separated that and then subsequently realized that the funding envelope that's required for the data centers, particularly to take advantage of where AI is going and the requirements that are going to be needed for the facilities, would be better suited by a different organization. So we were looking for a strategic buyer who could really take care of our customers, our employees going forward. And to that end, we announced in October of this year the exchange with Stellanor Data Center, which is backed by the DWS Group. We'll talk a little bit more about this deal going forward, but we do expect to complete that in Q1 calendar 2026. So really, the strategic priority of Redcentric today is going back to its roots, and that's being a managed service business. It's a solid company, 90% reoccurring revenues, and we have very loyal customers who are very grateful for the types of personalized service that we provide. And part of my role as a new CEO is coming in is understanding what are those competitive advantages, where we sit in the market, and where we need to take it going forward. And that's what we'd like to share with you in a few slides. But first, you know, we need to also talk about how we performed in the first half of this year. So if we could go to the next slide, let's just talk a little bit about sort of the corporate highlights of the first half.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So in terms of the MSP business unit, I mean, as Michelle mentioned, obviously we've had a transformational deal, which we announced in October, which we hope to complete in the early part of next calendar year. The focus is absolutely on MSP going forward. So I'm not going to steal Michelle's thunder and talk to some of these points on the left. We'll hold that back for a few minutes where Michelle's going to elaborate on the sort of growth strategy behind that. But I'll maybe highlight perhaps the third bullet point. So, and you know, we do see this as a transformational deal, not just in the sense that obviously we're realizing a substantial amount of cash and returning hopefully material part of that to shareholders, but really in the sense of what we leave the MSP business with. So we essentially see it's transformational in that we have an MSP business going forward that will by definition be supported by a stronger balance sheet. We'll talk to the use of proceeds, but in principle, it will have significantly less debt. It will be less capital intensive with less financing costs. So we think we have a stronger business going forward that can provide additional sort of cash generation and be essentially de-risked going forward. So I think that's fundamentally key to the transformational nature of the deal. In terms of the senior management point there on the top right hand side. I mean, obviously you've met us now and we're new to the business. I think during the last year, it's also fair to say that the management team has been strengthened very much actually at the front end in terms of a head of marketing, chief revenue officer, security. So we've filled the missing pieces on the management team, which I think tells us that we're in good shape, hopefully going forward next year to build, and we have the full complement of the team in place. In relation to the disposal of the DC business, I might sort of break this into three pieces, if that makes sense, to give a little bit more color. First of all, on the deal value. Secondly, on the timing, and thirdly, on the use of proceeds. And I've seen a couple of questions coming in, so I'm hopefully sort of going to address those within that. So first, in terms of the deal value, yes, I think we've been honest in our release. There is some variability on the deal value. So the enterprise value is essentially capped at 127 million. We know it can't go any higher than that, but we do recognise there is a range. And that range, we believe, is somewhere between 115 and 127 million. And the reason for the range is essentially this is a spin out or carve out deal. We've got some scraps, if you like, of the carve out still to finish. And that's why we have a period between exchange and completion. But I think to cut to the chase, the downside risk from the 127 million is really around a rent review. Around actually our flagship property in West London. And so that has the potential to bring that deal value or the enterprise value down. But happily, we have baked into the sale and purchase agreement the ability that we can sign additional commercial contracts that can essentially claw that back. So I think it's fair to say, in summary, that the board is pretty confident that in that range of 115 to 127, we hope to be at the top end of the range. So whilst we can't give you a definitive number, I think that is where our belief is that we'll end up in terms of the ultimate consideration. There will obviously be adjustments for working capital and cash and debt, etc. But in principle, we believe we'll be pegged towards the higher end of that 115 to 127. Enterprise value range. So that's the quantum. In terms of the timing, as Michelle said, we're looking to complete this by March 2026. And again, I think in terms of the condition precedents and the other factors that we or the other outstandings that we need to get done before then, I think the one that's driving the timetable is really very much the ISO accreditation piece. So it's obviously critical to the buyer that the entity that they inherit has the ISO accreditations, in fact, that we already have. We can't just kind of lift them across. It has to be essentially reapplied for. So it's essential for the buyer that they have those, but it's also essential for us as a seller because a number of our customers will obviously ultimately be still reliant on those services and that accreditation. So at the moment, that process is scheduled to be done by the 28th of February. And so I think with some confidence, we feel that 31 March is an honest timeline for getting this done. So that's really where we are on the timing. And finally, on the use of proceeds, the first sort of variable, really, what I can tell you and what we've announced really in the RNS already is what we've definitively agreed. So we've already definitively agreed with our bankers to reduce the debt to a certain level. So what we have is a revolving credit facility. It's a 60 million sterling facility. As of now, we've drawn 41 million. And we have committed that on completion, we will bring the facility size down from 60 to 30, and we will have borrowings no more than 19 million. So if we've got 41 now, 19, that by definition, we're writing a check of 22 million to bring that debt level down. But clearly, the proceeds will be significantly higher than that. So it's still up to the board to consider, actually, do we bring the debt down further? Or do we, return more to shareholders? And to the extent that we return money to shareholders, current thinking is that it should be very much by way of a tender offer as opposed to a straight dividend. So I can say that's where the thinking is. Obviously, we can't be definitive about the quantum, the timing, or the use of proceeds. But obviously, as soon as we have something more definitive, we will, present that to shareholders. So hopefully that's helpful and gives some colour to the transaction. Okay, so I guess this is a results presentation, so we should talk about results. So first of all, just by way of clarity, to be clear that in our RNS where we've presented results, we've very definitely only presented in the P&L, the income statement. We've presented the MSP business. Obviously, it's an ongoing continuing operation, whilst the DC business is still generating revenue, EBITDA and cash, we technically have shown it as a discontinued operation. So what we have done to present a like-for-like comparison is restate the prior September results to, again, just reflect MSP. So it's a like-for-like comparison. And in fact, the full year to March results already were presented that way. So we've got a like-for-like comparison, just for the avoidance of doubt. What I might just say, in terms of the highlights, obviously we've got some key metrics here. I think we're really seeing a focus on securing and maintaining the high-value, high-margin business and managing our cost base. And I think that's sort of the underlying theme of the first half. So what I will say is, yes, revenue was modestly down on the prior first half. We weren't concerned. I mean, we did say no for honest reasons to deals that were suboptimal commercial terms, etc. And it reflects in the fact that the gross margin actually did kick up a little bit from 59.1% to 61.6%. So we're pleased with an uplift on gross margin. And we're also pleased with an uplift on EBITDA, which has obviously increased both in absolute terms and in margin terms. For margins, we've gone from 12.8 to 13.7. So I think what you're seeing is hopefully better quality of earnings. And that's obviously going to be in our mind as we go forward as well. And the final point I should make is on recurring revenue. You can see here that recurring revenue, again, has notched up a little bit from 88% to 90.4%, which is in itself is a pretty amazing stat and obviously very helpful for visibility going forward. We're often asked, well, could it trend up even more? Could it be 100%? Well, the honest answer is no, because we will always need an element of one-time revenue, professional service type revenue in terms of installations, upgrades and similar kind of projects. So we actually think 90% is probably as good as it gets, but it's a fabulous stat in its own right, but hopefully that gives you some clarity. On the right-hand side of the slide, we've got a section on DC. I mean, I'm not going to go through the DC results unless anybody has particular questions, but obviously, we fundamentally baked down the deal and that's key. But I think, reflecting that it's prior to our time, but prior management have built essentially a great asset, you know, without a doubt. And we think we've got a great price for that asset. I think in terms of what the deal value was, it equates to about 15 times adjusted EBITDA of the DC business. So trailing EBITDA, it's adjusted for rent costs, which is, as you probably realize, are below the EBITDA line. And in a data center business, they're quite material. So if we take the EBITDA, take out the cash cost of the rent, multiply that by actually 15.1, we get to a deal value, which I think is a great metric. The point I'll probably cover on the combined section really is really just on what we have as a business. So you know, we've obviously got a business which at the moment is generating substantial EBITDA both on the MSP and the DC side. We do have a debt level which I talked to earlier. The revolving credit piece is 41 million. But actually, I think it's fair to say that the challenge in the past has been translating that EBITDA into either additional cash or paying down debt, and that has been a challenge. But coming back to the transformative nature of the deal, we absolutely think it changes the balance sheet, because certainly it's going to reduce the debt level by at least the 22 million I talked about, potentially more. We'll also have, by definition, reduced financing costs going forward, a less capital-intensive business going forward, and therefore, you know, we essentially have a business that has a much greater potential to convert the earnings into cash, and that is going to be our focus going forward. So I think, again, that leaves the board open to quite a nice challenge as to what to do with that use of proceeds, and clearly it can, you know, continue to pay down further amounts of debt to the extent we haven't already paid it down. But perhaps more importantly, it can also think about reintroducing a dividend, which we would hope would be a progressive dividend policy. So again, I can't give you definitive decisions as to what we plan to do, but we've got to get the deal done. And then we have, as I say, some quality questions to ask ourselves.
I think it would probably be fair to say that Tony and I and others have sort of walked into a three-ring circus this year. You know, we are in the process of splitting the businesses, carving out, and then selling it at the same time, trying to assess where the company is and making sure that we're delivering the revenue, and then repositioning it for the future. So one of the key areas, and when you look at the MSP businesses, I would say over the last 3 or 4 years, with all of the acquisitions really focused on the data center, the MSP business has kind of been left to its own design and perhaps has been ticking along, but has not really been focused on its go-to-market motions. And so that's really been the fundamentals that we have to put in place for this year for the business to be able to grow moving into FY27. So as Tony had mentioned, we brought in a new chief revenue officer, a new marketing head, and we're taking a look at a variety of ways to be able to scale the business. And one of the things that stands out is we really don't have any new business salespeople. So in Q2, we have brought in a seeder team. They're doing a great job of putting together pipeline, and we're starting to see actually some potential wins for this year. But really, given the sales cycle, I would expect their input to be coming in at FY27. And I'm hoping by FY28, they'd be representing up to 15% of the top line going forward. Another area is not only not having new salespeople, but the company has never really utilized what we call channel or partner ecosystems. We have suppliers and tech vendors who we call partners, but we haven't utilized them in the way that is a little bit more forward thinking within the industry. And one of the key vendors that we've been working with, of course, is VMware. If you're not familiar enough with VMware, who has also then been bought out by Broadcom a while ago, they've been changing their channel program. And in the UK, they have now consolidated where any business can no longer come directly and buy their services from VMware. They have to go through one of 8 partners in the UK. And RedCentric is one of those 8 partners. If there has been a company like a CSP who's built up a business on VMware, they can no longer go directly to VMware for that either. So there is a whole change in the market in terms of distribution and how to be able to change business models. And so we're working very hard to be able to have that as one of our key drivers. At least that's what we've been focusing on for the first half of this year.
Okay, just to take the second half of the slide, I'm not sure service is the best title, actually. It's really intended to cover operations in generally, but clearly in the past, we've had quite a significant distraction in terms of splitting the business into two. And that, I think it's fair to say that hasn't been the most straightforward process. But having done that, obviously, we've got the deal as well, which is certainly past exchange and hopefully close to completion. The focus is very much on running the MSP business, running that organic business. And I think that as the highlights show, our focus has to be on operational efficiencies, streamlining the platforms, the network. So things like rationalizing, simplifying where we can, and just operationally just get more horsepower out of the business is really key. I mean, one example is the facilities. We've got 10 sites in the UK right now. 8 of them actually will go off with the DC business, which clearly simplifies things. We're left with 2 sites, our head office and very much our centre of gravity is in Harrogate in Yorkshire. And that's a sort of busy, buzzy office. 10 miles down the road, we have another site in York, which is actually even larger, even more expensive, and has been little used recently. So in fact, we have closed that down and obviously centralized things in Harrogate. So that's an obvious low-hanging fruit. I think what we're saying is there are more of those to come, and we will do our best, and that's going to be a key focus, just to streamline the business and keep it as simple and straightforward as possible. I mean, I think to achieve some of these things, Michelle will talk to the strategy, but it will be a modest investment out of OPEX, I should say, just to help us achieve some of those future efficiencies going forward.
Okay. So what is the MSP business today? I mean, currently we have 3 core towers of providing cloud services and cybersecurity, our network connectivity, and our voice and ICT communications group. We serve about 1,500 customers nationally with a good balance between the mid-market, commercial, and public sector. So, coming in as a new CEO, I really wanted to get under the skin and understand where does RedCentric play within the UK market and what are the things that differentiate us. So I hired a group called Canalys. They are recognized globally as one of the best research houses that only focus on managed service providers. And we provided them our product and customer profitability. They looked at our product portfolio. They interviewed some of our customers as well as our management. And together, we sort of went through what we thought was unique. And my gut reaction when I first came in was not only is that you have a national network and, we have an end-to-end services, but it was the workforce itself, which was really unique. More than a third of our workforce is in the highly secured clearance. They maintain certifications that are highly secure. And the level and the depth of the different certifications that we have across many different regulated industries. These things take a long time to invest in, and it isn't just a matter of what is the IT wrap around perhaps a server in the data center. It's, are your people UK citizens? How do they handle data? How do you separate it physically? What is the whole process? Do we understand what it is in financial services and healthcare that a private company needs to be able to integrate and work with a public entity? And to that end, that was a real eye-opener in terms of our depth and experience. And so that's one of the areas that we're going to expand on in just a minute. The other area is that the fact that we are an AIM-listed business, it does make us transparent. It shows that, our continuity and our stability for the customers who wish to contract, because they're contracting, for 5 years worth of services, they want to make sure that we're going to be here in the long haul. And I think with what Tony's talking about with this transformational deal, that's going to land us with probably one of the least leveraged balance sheets going forward out of our peer group in the marketplace. So that's just only enhances our attractiveness. And in talking with a lot of customers, one of the key things that they really talk about is the fact that being a mid-sized business, we may be 80% standard, but it's that 20% customization. We really try to understand what the customer requirement is, and we can change our service delivery model to a certain extent to be able to provide something that's a bit more bespoke for them. And this is something that our larger peers cannot do because of the structure. And last but not least, when things go wrong, and they always go wrong in IT, that they have the ability to call directly to the top of the organization. And it's how we respond in those moments that makes them feel secure and trusted with a partner, and why they stay with us for so many years. So what is the market that we actually are operating in? Because trying to fit, you know, where is RedCentric's position? And if I don't know how much of you follow it, but this is one of the most competitive and fragmented markets in all of Europe. There are over 12,000 MSPs that operate in the UK, but about 80% of them make maybe a little more than 10 million in managed service revenue. And most of them are highly unprofitable. So they tend to be somewhat niche or regionally oriented. Obviously, RedCentric is in probably one of the smaller of the larger entities. But if we just took a look at what we provide today and did nothing else, the market opportunity for RedCentric is about $2 billion. But with some investments slightly and just a couple of areas, we can end it open up to 14. So there's a lot to go for. We're clearly within, you know, the handful of the leaders. We're profitable and we're stable. So I think that's a really good position within this very fragmented market. Next one. The five main areas that MSPs today are focusing in where they see the highest growth paths are these five buckets. But when you take a look at what is the capability that RedCentric already has today, we already have depth in cybersecurity. We already have depth in providing public cloud services. But taking our current product portfolio and overlaying it and understanding what's missing, if we would make just a few more investments in that, in widening and deepening it, we can maintain growth paths with the highest areas. And so that's where we're going to be focusing on over the next couple of years. Next page. So I tried to be able to put together strategy on a page. And there's some really interesting themes that all MSPs are having to face into. And first, of course, is the cybersecurity threats. Today, CIOs, still the number one concern that they have is the ability to be able to ward off threats. And in particularly the UK, the rise of national threat actors, particularly for MSPs, is quite a concern. You may or may not be aware that there is a new bill that will become active next year where MSPs of RedCentric size are going to be regulated, a lot like GDPR, where, you know, if we don't respond in the appropriate way within a certain time frame, up to 4% of our revenue could be a fine going forward. So making sure that not only are we internally where we need to be in terms of security, but also helping our customers be able to manage that. I think it would be an understatement to say geopolitical instability has been probably a new and increasing risk around us. But in particularly in Europe, where it's leading to is those who are utilizing public cloud services, there's sort of a backlash, which we're calling cloud repatriation, where people are concerned that maybe they shouldn't be on foreign hyperscales infrastructure. Now, to be clear, in the UK, we don't really see that in a massive way because we're much more aligned as a nation with the United States, where the majority of the hyperscalers come from. But what we are seeing is that our customers are having to think twice about where they want their work set sitting. It doesn't all have to be sitting on a public cloud, and they may want to ring fence and put more on a private cloud. And this is where RedCentric can, you know, help you with, do you need sovereign elements of it? Do you need it, you know, for cost reasons from being on the public cloud? And so this is a trend that we are leaning into. And it's been happening for quite some time that, you know, moving from single point solutions to an integrated platform is so important on this modernization trail, because you can't take advantage of the last box being AI-driven experiences if you don't have a more consolidated tech stack. And to be frank, the UK mid-market business is still highly fragmented, and it isn't being able to take advantage of the newer technologies coming down because they don't have the right infrastructure. So that gives us an opportunity with those types of market dynamics. We really feel that by investing more into our cyber capabilities and into, we bought a company in 2022. In all fairness, it's doing quite well, but it's been segmented from the rest of the business. So the first thing we're doing is integrating it and bringing it more into our core and taking their capability and integrating it into our overall managed service solutions. And then we also have some considerations that we need to invest in terms of expanding our SOC capabilities and taking a look at a few other things down the road. As I mentioned, you know, the compliance paths, one of the things that we have done is we've gotten all of these certifications and sovereign capabilities, usually for a particular customer, whether it be the home office or a defense entity or public sector in the healthcare. But what we haven't thought about is how do you take that knowledge and base and apply it a bit more into the commercial world, where we're very deep into life sciences and pharmaceuticals and some of the defense entities who feed into the public sector. And so being able to help them through those regulatory hurdles and making sure that they have a sovereign service is something that we're now sort of productizing and taking to market. In the public sector, being able to give, you know, a broader and deeper support, particularly overlaying AI into that, making sure that they'll have an AI sovereign sandbox that they'll be able to play with before, and just making very selective innovations within verticals. We had thought about maybe turning the whole company into a verticalization, but that requires a certain level of mechanization and automation that we're not quite there yet. So getting deeper within our healthcare center sector is probably the best way to start. Now, how are we going to do this? Well, first of all, you need to protect and grow our customers. So as we said, you know, providing better security and integrating it into our portfolio, working with our frameworks and also advancing our managed services, particularly around our private cloud developments, working with VMware. Our infrastructure is already AI enabled, but in being able to now find the right kind of user cases that would move forward. And that's going to help us win new logos. What we are seeing generally in the market is you almost need 20 million of hardware investment and a consolidated tech stack to really take advantage of AI. And those don't really, that kind of criteria isn't that prevalent here in the UK market. But that doesn't mean that the mid-sized market isn't ready for utilizing the benefits that AI has. So being able to find the right user cases with our customers who we have the most amount of data with and being able to provide those AI private clouds is an area that we're focusing on. I talked earlier about different route to markets. This is key, working with our five major vendors, starting to build ecosystems, which means it isn't just the vendor and us, but there'll be three or four other companies who also provide adjunct services, whereas an integrated solution you can take to your customers. And this allows us to scale and have others also helping kind of pass on and sell the business. So we just don't have to keep adding more direct salespeople. So that's all working on our top line. But again, we need to be able to drive greater levels of efficiencies. I think one of the biggest projects that we have going on at the moment is on F&O automation. Company invested in Microsoft Dynamics 4 years ago, which was probably the right choice at the time. But our company was very complex. And so there was a lot of customization that was put into that installation. Of course, Microsoft has improved over the years. And so now we've had to keep putting code on top of the customization to keep up with the changes. 4 years on, we're now having a difficulty where every 7 or 8 weeks, you know, the business almost comes to a slow halt until we get the customization. It's too expensive. We don't get the value, and it's really slowing down the business. So what we're doing at the moment is pre-investing for discovery, and then the implementation will start at the end of Q4. And we're hoping then by the second half of next year, we'll be able to start stripping out costs from the business. When you take a look at connectivity, the way that managed services businesses moving forward is they have to be as automated as possible. And with all the attention on the data centers, we've sort of missed some of those key elements. So we're focusing on circuit provisioning that's automated and some other elements moving forward. And then, of course, you know, being able to optimize margins. Tony already talked about facilities that we and reducing those, but we also have efficiency programs, everything from hardware and license optimization to our BT circuits, being able to move those to the digital ones. There's a variety of things that are already in play that's going to help and will really start to show its way in the second half of FY27. One thing we should note is with the sale of the data center, we have a transitional service agreement. We will be providing to the new buyer, because Stellanor is, at the moment, they have been buying assets, carve-out assets from a variety of companies. So they haven't built the infrastructure of their business yet within the UK. And so we're going to be providing billing, their IT, their HR services, their compliance work for the next 12 months, which means we will have people who will continue being able to service the data center, although it will only be over with managed service revenue to cover it. So we're hoping to be able to accelerate that as much as possible, and then we can simplify our business model a little bit going forward. And last but not least, we're one of the few managed service providers of our size that actually have operations in India. We have about 100 people there. This year, we had to bring our second line support back to the UK to maintain for many of our customers the sovereign compliance. But then we've moved up testing. And I think there's more that we could do to take advantage of our Indian operations. I've been talking with them every single month, but I'll be going out there in February to do an assessment and see, are we getting the most out of the group and what more we could perhaps have them support us. I recognize that is a lot. But we want you to understand that for the next 3 years, we have a plan in place. We know where we need to go. The investments that are required, we believe, don't really require anything more than the cash flow that's going forward. It's transformational what we're doing with the data center, not just for the shareholders, but it's transformational for the MSP business. And it's really gotten the organization excited, because we have a path forward. People know what they need to do. And now it's a matter of execution at this point. So,
quickly. Okay, so financials. Well, I'm not going to repeat the numbers. Obviously, we presented them earlier in the summary, but obviously, it's helpful. We've seen gross margin tick up in the first half. It's helpful that the EBITDA has grown as well in the first half. In the second half, absolutely, we have a lot to do. We have certainly an execution challenge, I'd summarize it as, in terms of clearly we have to sign new business, deliver new business, manage costs. I think to some of Michelle's points, there is a modest investment, so we have to kind of get those done. I mean, they're not significant. They're 1 to 2 million of OPEX. They're not reliant on the DC deal. We plan to get those done in the second half. So we end up really with a strong platform from which we can, or strong foundation from which we can deliver more substantial growth going forward. So I think we're pleased with the first half, but we know we've got a lot to do in the second half, absolutely.
So in conclusion, it is a transformational year and it's a really busy year. You know, being able to maintain a VAU, find our future, and also make sure that we're doing the best for the data center business and shareholder. So I think where we really need to focus on, though, is execution going forward. And I believe that what we've tried to explain, where we're spending our time, we still will be dominated by some of the requirements from the data center, but I think it's all for the best in terms of where we want to lead the MSP going forward. I am very excited. I'm not going to go through all of these. These are the points that we've already met, but I think when we come out of this, you will find a company that is focused. It'll have one of the least leveraged balance sheets going forward, so we have economic stability. We have a direction and a lot of enthusiasm to be able to deliver on it. And so I hope that you'll give us a chance to keep watching us as we start to execute going forward. All right, now we have a few questions here on the side. So I believe we already answered the one about the disposal of the proceeds. So I don't think
we'll hand back to Alexandra.
Oh, Alexandra, I need to go to you.
It's not a problem at all, but I just thank you very much for your presentation. Ladies and gentlemen, please do continue to submit your questions just by using the Q&A tab that's situated on the top right-hand corner of your screen. But just while the company take a few moments to review the questions that have been submitted today, I'd like to remind you that a recording of this presentation, along with a copy of the slides and the published Q&A, can be accessed via your investor dashboards. As you can see, we have received questions throughout today's presentation. Michelle, I'll hand back to you to run through the Q&A.
Thanks, Alessandro. I believe the first one on the use of proceeds on the disposal, we've already answered.
Yeah, I mean, do you want me to just repeat it for clarity?
And also then the net cash position.
Yeah, okay. So I'll take them just in the order that they've appeared. So James, thank you for your question. You asked about the disposal proceeds of 127 million. How are they going to be split between debt, shareholder return, and MSP investment, and also when? So hopefully, we answered most of that anyway. So to be clear, the 127 is the ceiling of enterprise value. There's some variability on the number, but I think we've told you our position. We've mentioned, I think, that a minimum of 22 million gets paid back to the bank. It could be more. And obviously, that affects the sort of shareholder piece. But I think just for the avoidance of doubt, the third part was what we need to invest in the MSP. I think we sort of covered that later. There's a modest investment in the second half. It doesn't come out of the DC proceeds or sale proceeds. So it's essentially a question of shareholders versus debt repayment is what's left. I think the next question I think I've been asked to take as well. So thank you, Matt, for that question. Your question was about leverage. What leverage or net cash position is the board targeting, and how does this influence future capital returns? So I think just to say, just to kind of go back to our sort of what's our worst position, if you like, which is if we pay the minimum amount back to the bank, we have 19 million of revolving credit. We have about 1.5 million or so of finance leases. So we're at sort of 20 million or so of debt, and that's the ceiling, which actually, to be honest, represents one and a bit times EBITDA, go forward EBITDA for MSP, which Michelle made this point, and we're very mindful that we think we're already actually relatively modestly leveraged, but that would be substantially less than some of our peers. So that's a great position to be, and that would be our worst case, but clearly we could pay back more. So the board hasn't mandated a specific target, but we think we're in a good range, and even at that maximum, it kind of makes sense.
Since we're still on financials, do you want to answer, Rob?
Yeah, so I'll take the next question, which is from Rob. Thank you for your question. Your question was gross margin, EBITDA margins have improved in the first half despite lower revenue. That's right. What do you see as sustainable EBITDA margin going forward for the MSP business? Well, again, if we look to our peers, some of who are substantially leveraged and can't really make a margin, we think, to be honest, 12%-13% EBITDA margin is actually pretty good. So going forward, we've obviously talked about a growth strategy. We've talked about managing costs. So if we can see that ticking up to 15%, we'd be absolutely delighted. Will that be easy? Well, no, but that's kind of where we see things going. Could they be 20%, 25%, 30%? Well, that's kind of unlikely. But we do think there's upside in the EBITDA. And if we end up with a growth business, strong recurring revenue, hardly leveraged, generating cash, and we've got an EBITDA of 12, 13, and then trending slightly north, then I think that we'd be delighted with that.
Great. David has asked if I would give an honest appraisal of the current market demand in the MSP business, as other participants have commented on low growth and low demand and deferred decision-making. Well, I don't think it's any great surprise that, to be honest, the thing that's driving the MSP market at the moment is the lack or the general economic environment, and particularly in the public sector area. Yeah, obviously, for mid-market, the budget probably wasn't the best that came out for hospitality and some of our services businesses. But in terms of the IT, companies know they need to be investing in their modernization. The only way that they're going to be able to stay in business is by automating more, making sure they're more secure. But it's a balance of what they can deliver versus where the needs of keeping payroll going. I think Megabyte is the one that had mentioned that, for the most part, they're looking at 4% is probably the best in the MSP in terms of growth. And I think it's really in the pockets and where you choose to play. The U.K. government at the moment has probably been its own worst enemy for the demand. because, you know, the constant reorganization, they don't really, especially if you take a look at the healthcare center, which is one of the things that we've had to face into. There are 49 integrated care boards. They're now being consolidated to 26 over a period of time. As they, you know, three or four come together, who's in charge? Everybody's fighting for their job. Do they have the ability to know who's in charge of the budget? How do you sign something off? It's taken a while and will continue into next year. We're now starting to see for the ones that have consolidated, the RFPs are coming through, and it's a matter of can they get it through to be able to spend their budget for this year by the end of March. So you're going to see peaks and troughs, but I think for the most part, we need to have a better general economic environment to go back to. The demand is there. People just aren't willing to part with their cash at the moment. All right, James, how will the strategy to broaden partner ecosystems translate into new customer wins and revenue, and what is the expected timeline? We did a mapping of all of our strategic partners, and we kind of came up with the five that we would say are the ones that we are probably closest to and most embedded in our solutions. And we're starting to work with those to build out ecosystems. I think I'll go back to the VMware because that's the most furthest along, having spent the time on it this first half of the year. One of the things that we see is, as I mentioned, there are a number of CSPs who can no longer go directly to VMware, but they have 3 years to be able to decide. They were able to buy as many licenses they wanted. They already have, you know, a business model. They've got customers on their infrastructure. And so they've got 3 years to kind of run that. And I would say about a third of them are going to move off of VMware and go to Nutanix or an alternative. Another third have their head in the sand. And the last third are actually realizing they've got to change their business model and were in active discussions. So building off of the VM ecosystem isn't going to see some major spike for RedCentric in FY26, and it'll start to build in FY27. So it is a motion that's going to change within the market. But for us at RedCentric, that is a whole new area of customer base that we haven't dealt with in the past. And so we're going to start to see ramping over the next 18 months. And hopefully I will get to be able to announce next quarter our first major win of a CSP. So keeping our fingers crossed for that one. And I think, Alessandra, I don't think this is blocked. I don't think we have any other questions.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for answering those questions from investors. Of course, the company can review all the questions for today and we'll publish the responses out on the Investor Meet Company platform. But just before redirecting investors to provide you with their feedback, which is particularly important to the company, Michelle, could I just ask you for a few closing comments?
Yes. Again, thank you so much for taking the time and listening to our story and getting to meet Tony and I. And of course, we're always open for discussion for anybody who'd like to come forward. But we're very excited about where the future is. And I hope that you'll be watching this space. And if that, going forward, I just wish you all of the best for a Merry Christmas and the rest of your year. Thank you.
That's great. Well, thank you once again for updating investors today. Could I please ask investors not to close the session, as you now be automatically redirected to provide your feedback and all the management team can better understand your views and expectations. On behalf of the management team of RedCentric PLC, we'd like to thank you for attending today's presentation and good morning to you all.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from Investor Meet Company. Just a reminder that the presentation this podcast was based on is available in full on our website, where you can watch live company presentations and put your questions to management directly. The best part is, it's free. Our mission is to give retail investors like you the same access and information as institutional investors. Visit investormeetcompany.com today to follow the companies you're interested in.